The Ambitious Radio Network. Conversations with ambitious entrepreneurs and thought leaders. Are you an entrepreneur, startup junkie, or just someone interested in improving their leadership skills? If you're looking to be motivated, inspired, and uncover what it takes to get to the next level, listening to Ambitious Radio will be well worth the investment of your time. We have weekly engaging conversations with today's most influential thought leaders and entrepreneurs as they discuss their successes, failures, tipping points, and other priceless information that you can apply immediately after listening. Now, here's your host, Doug Parker.
All right, welcome back to the Ambitious Radio Network. This is your host, Doug Parker, and I'll tell you what, I am so excited about today's interview. I'm always excited. But, you know, we have people from different backgrounds, different experience levels, always on the show and doing different things. But this gentleman has a significant amount of experience. He's the CEO of SwiftPage. Today we've got John Oshel.
It's Oshel, Doug.
I thought I had it right, but I was practicing before and I had the other one stuck in my head there. But Oshel, John Oshel on the show today, and he's the Chief Executive Officer of SwiftPage. Now, you may or may not know that name, but I promise you, you've heard of ACT before, and that is the company that runs ACT, and he's got over 30 years of history of building highly profitable and sustainable revenue growth for emerging companies and established global leaders. He's been recognized several times for his involvement in the tech industry, and when he's not working at SwiftPage, he enjoys being a husband, a father, a grandfather, and then squeezes in a little time for golf, skiing, and boating. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Thanks, Doug. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate you, and we're going to dig into, you know, the business side of things here a little bit later, but tell us just a little bit about what I might have missed in the intro there. I mean, tell us, you know, where are you from? Where'd you grow up? Those types of things.
You know, Doug, I'm originally from New Jersey, so I'm a Jersey boy, East Coast boy, and went to college out in Iowa. Which was a major culture shock for an East Coast kid. I got a scholarship to play football. I was a quarterback, wasn't big enough to play in D1, so decided to go out and play a little D2 ball, and went out there. And, you know, I always joke and tell everybody that, you know, everybody says, oh, wow, that's great. You know, what'd you major in? And I said, well, you know, I kind of had some fun out there playing football, so I kind of majored in alcoholism and minored in hangovers and had a really good time. Came back after that experience and realized, started working in business, and I was in kind of the folding carton manufacturing business, which was an interesting business to be in, and I realized that there was a lot of stuff being done manually, and then people started to automate, and I said, hey, you know what, this computer thing, you know, there may be something there. You know, now this is way back in the late 70s, early 80s. So it's when all the computer stuff was coming out. And so that's really when I went back and got a computer science degree from Rutgers and then started to work in a consulting role with a consulting company. And I started getting into large back then, Doug, it was MRP. It wasn't even ERP, right? It was, you know, back then it was MRP, then it went MRP2, then it was ERP, you know, et cetera. So we were doing MRP implementations. And I said, wow, you know, I think I've got a niche that I can follow in my career here. And that is, you got a group of people over here that really know business and a group of people over here that really know technology. And guess what? They can't communicate with one another. So that's what I set my sights out on doing, is being that kind of go-between and sort of, you know, kind of getting people to interpret stuff back and forth. And that actually was really successful. That enabled me to really kind of move my career pretty quickly. I worked for a consulting firm, and then I went to work for Kellogg's, which is, you know, everybody knows Kellogg's. Did most of my work outside of the U.S. Was in countries. I was in England. I was in Germany, in Mexico, Brazil, Australia. Was hoping they forget about me in Australia, but they brought me back. You know, so I kind of did all of that. And then, you know, I said, hey, I'm going to try this startup thing. You know, I'm going to try and do that. So. Worked with a company that we formed a holding company called Land America Financial. We acquired Commonwealth Land Title Insurance, TransNation Insurance, Title Insurance, and Lawyers Title, and formed the largest title insurance company in the U.S. And I said, wow, this startup stuff is pretty easy. You just got to go out and acquire it. Did that for a while, and then went back out and worked for Johnson & Johnson, another, relatively small company. Nah, just kidding. It was interesting. I had a lot of international experience, Doug, and it's both a curse and a blessing. And a blessing because everybody wants you, and a curse because everybody wants you. And they want to put you in different down in different countries. And so my first assignment with Johnson & Johnson was down in Latin America again. And came back out and did some stuff, went off and did an MBA at Dartmouth, and kind of honed my my business skills there, and then did a very interesting assignment, came out to Colorado, that's where I'm at now, and took a very small company called IHS, which was a $200 million privately held company, about 44 years old. Was kind of a mess. We kind of came in. Jerry Stead was the CEO and chairman, and he kind of handpicked a group of us. We came in and cleaned it up in 2003 and 2004 and took it public in 2005. And next thing you know, we did 37 acquisitions. And when I walked out the door in 2010, we were about $1.7 billion. They kept on rolling for a while. And, interesting story there is that they just did a merger with Market for $13 billion. So that was quite a run. We went public at $16 a share and, traded up to $111 a share. So lots of great, excitement there. And once I left there, I really started looking at, how do I give back? How do I give back to the community? Into smaller companies, et cetera. So I started investing in small companies, and with my investment, I would also do advisory services and sit on the boards, et cetera. So I was doing that, and that was SwiftPage. Was one of my early investments. I invested that in 2003, and with Bob Ogden, who was the founder, and started advising the company and. 2006 kind of helped them do what's called an OEM, kind of embedded their technology. They were SwiftPage at that time was just an email marketing company, so very similar to like a Constant Contact or a MailChimp, etc. And we said, how are we going to get to the small businesses? That's where we really focus. So we said, let's embed our technology in another technology that already has a number of small businesses as their customers. So we picked Sage as our target. They had, interestingly enough, they had Act, they had SalesLogix, they had Sage CRM, and they had Sage 50, which is four products that we embedded our technology into. And the next thing you know, SwiftPage started growing like crazy. We officially established a board. I got on the board in 2009. 2012, the board asked me to step in and kind of take over as CEO to really execute a growth strategy. SwiftPage at that time had gotten to about $4.5 million of revenue, but it couldn't break through that wall, right? So you get a lot of small companies that hit that $5 million and they're just like, how do I get to 10? And they really struggle. So I came on board. I told the board. I said, "Be careful, guys. If I'm going to come on, we're going to grow fast." And they're like, "Yeah, sure, Don." And so I came on in July of 2012. By March of 2013, I had acquired Act and SalesLogix from Sage. We grew to $70 million in revenue, 350 employees in four locations around the world, and everybody's head exploded. So we had a lot of fun. For sure. So anyway, that's kind of my brief history. It probably a little bit long-winded, but that's me.
No, that's very exciting. And, you know, you hear about that, you said that $5 million wall. And, you know, I've been there in business, and I've seen a lot of other entrepreneurs in that. You know, you get to that $5 million to close to 10, and it's kind of a lifestyle business where your family has it. It provides a nice lifestyle. But taking it to the absolute next level is a whole different thing. So I could see how, you know, whoever the people that were there before could think, okay, yeah, we're going to have you as the CEO, and then, you know, we're going to, let's say we double or triple, that'd be fantastic, and then we're maybe 20 million. But you're like, nah, we blow this thing out of the water and 70 million. That's the kind of things, those nuggets that people want to hear about. How did you do those things? Where did you get there? And you know, we've got about a minute left in this segment. So what I'd love to do is just kind of close it up, talking just a little bit, really briefly. We talked a lot about business in that segment, but I heard you say, you know, we introduced you, you know, you're a father, you're a husband, you're a grandfather. I'm a new grandfather just in the last 6 weeks or so, so that was kind of cool, and for the first time. And just, you know, how do you maybe balance real quick all that great explosive stuff with the family in a nutshell?
Yeah, I would say, Doug, the family is my lifeline. I have to be around them. You know, I'll make personal sacrifices to be around them. Like, for instance, I get up very, very early in the morning to work out because I don't want to take time out of being around the family to work out during the day, et cetera. You really, for me, it's setting that priority. And my family can tell if I'm away for a while. I travel a lot. And if I'm away from the lifeline too long, boy, it just really starts getting to me, and I have to come back, and I have to be surrounded by my family. So it's a conscious personal decision that I make in order to make sure that I spend time with the family.
You know, that's great for your, you know, for you to share that with us, because so many people, they get blinded by either the success or the chasing of the success. And they let the family things, you know, either go by the wayside or not even purposely. They kind of take it for granted more, that they just expect them to be there or whatever the case is. And it's a tough deal. So it's great that that's a priority for you, and that, you know, you have that yearning whenever you're away to get back and get rejuvenated there. And we'll talk a little bit more about that also later in the show. But really appreciate you sharing that with us. And listeners, if you like what you're hearing, go to Facebook, like us there, follow us on Twitter, whatever the case may be. And all the things that we discuss, we'll put on Ambitious Radio on the show notes. And you can go check it out at ambitiousradio.com. We'll be right back after a brief word from our sponsors. Hey, ambitious listeners, you hear us interviewing entrepreneurs all the time, and there's a common theme. They want to be more productive and improve their communication. As an ambitious entrepreneur, you're always on the go. So turn your mobile phone into a business phone system with Grasshopper, the entrepreneur's phone system. The Ambitious Radio Network recently partnered with Grasshopper to offer our listeners a special discount. Log on to ambitiousradio.com and click on the Grasshopper banner in the bottom right-hand corner. Get a new business number or keep your current one. Sound professional with a main greeting and multiple extensions that forwards callers to your mobile phone or others in your organization. Get a toll free number or local number for your business with multiple extensions. Set up each extension with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. Get your voicemails emailed to you as an audio attachment or transcribe an email. Keep business calls separate from your personal calls. Plans start at $12 a month with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Remember to click on the Grasshopper banner at ambitiousradio.com for a special discount for our listeners. Join the over 150,000 small business owners that have stayed connected with Grasshopper. See how Grasshopper works? It's the entrepreneur's phone system. Turn the world into your office. All right, we're back on the Ambitious Radio Network with John Oshel, and I'll tell you what, I'm just really loving all this great information. I mean, this is a high-energy, explosive-type growth gentleman that really has made it happen in multiple different businesses. Been with Swift Pages now for, I think, about 5 years, but came in and absolutely set that place on fire. So let's talk a little bit about the business. I mean, you know, I mentioned ACT, that piece of software, because it was something I was familiar with about 15 years ago. And as I transitioned into being a full-time entrepreneur, I needed a CRM that was online. And at the time, I think ACT maybe was just like in the box software that didn't have the online piece to it. And I used Salesforce for a little while, and then ultimately got to spending too much money and brought a programmer in to do some things internally for ourselves. But tell us just a little bit about exactly what all Swift does. I know you touched on it with the email marketing and those types of things, but what all do you guys do? How do you generate the majority of your revenue?
Yeah, so, you know, what we did was, Doug, when we set out to do our growth strategy that we talked about in the last segment is, you know, we looked at the SMB market, the small business. We said, hey, you know what? They need four things, four digital assets in order to grow. We call them presence, traffic, conversion retention, and optimization tools. And presence, everybody knows about. That's Facebook pages, websites, etc. Traffic drives traffic to that presence, which then generates leads. Conversion and retention is all about converting those leads to customers, retaining them, and growing them. Optimization tools are HR software, finance software, etc. We set out to say we want to own, we as SwiftPage, we wanted to own the conversion and retention space for the SMB market. That was our strategy. And so the very first thing that we did is it's like, okay, well, we were playing in it with email marketing. That was kind of a marketing automation piece, just a small piece. But, you know, what is the anchor of that? And obviously the anchor is CRM. And why is that? And that's because it houses the most critical information that you need for your business to grow. And that is information about your customers, your contacts, your leads, your prospects, etc. So that's kind of how we set out and said, you know what, let's go get that. We acquired it when we acquired ACT, the ACT brand. We totally embedded our email marketing into it. And so what that created for us was what we call the center of the universe, that was the authoritative source of all the information you need about your customer. You could then, you know, have that information, has sales automation in there, so you can look at how do I track my opportunities, my pipeline, you know, etc. And then the third piece was it had the marketing automation completely built in. So very rarely do you find a small business CRM that has all three legs of the stool of CRM completely integrated. And that's really what ACT does. That's kind of what we set out to do. Now, the most critical piece of information or thing that I could tell small businesses right now, right? If you don't have the current information, it's not correct, right? If you don't have the correct information, it's probably not current. And so you need to make sure that you're keeping an eye on that as well. Consistency is interesting because in today's world, Doug, you have so much information in so many different places. Small businesses have the ability to have, you know, customer information in Facebook and, you know, Twitter and Outlook and, you know, all over the place. And if it's not consistent, guess what? It's not going to be current and correct, right? So you need to make sure you have that consistency. And the best way to have consistency is to have one authoritative source for your information and then flow information from there. The last one is completeness. And everybody thinks that that's like, oh, yeah, I know that. You have to have, you know, all their email addresses, both their addresses, you know, et cetera, the phone number. And that's all very, very valuable information. But when we talk about completeness, completeness is housing every single interaction you have with that customer, leader, prospect, housing that in one specific spot. So if you do send an email to somebody, you house that interaction. If you do a transaction, you have the payment information, you house that. So all that interaction in one place. So if you have the four C's of information, you know, as a small business, you will be on your way to grow your business.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned there is kind of one place to house it. And, you know, like I said, I'm a big CRM guy. I truly, you know, got it basically addicted to it back in the early 2000s, late 90s and early 2000s. So much that when I left my business, there wasn't platforms online like I had been used to using that were custom built. And I was in the automobile business, and I actually went to Auto Bytel. Back when it was by telephone, they had a little workaround CRM, and I was like, look, I'll buy leads from you just so I can use your CRM to do something else with it. And they're like, nah, we can't really do that. And I went back and forth until I found a functional option. But those things being housed in one place, we have a rule within our organization right now that we basically tell people, if it's not logged in the CRM, it didn't happen. So if you say, oh, I called him and left him a message, because we have some protection for our salespeople, you know, if they follow certain processes, and they're like, yeah, I talked to him yesterday or 3 days ago. I'm like, I don't see in the CRM. Like, no, but I talked to him. I was like, yeah, but if it's not in the CRM, it didn't happen. That's our great equalizer. That's how we can track everything. And it's so important when you can go back in and a customer says this or that, and you just go back in and you reflect upon it. It is such a valuable tool. I would never operate a business again without having a CRM. And I haven't, you know, used your particular software in a while, but it seems like all the things that you guys have done, I've been asleep at the wheel, not keeping up with your company. It seems like there's some very significant improvements and things as I was researching for the show of things that you guys have done. So, you know, we've talked about some of the successes. One thing I would like to just, you know, pick your brain on just a little bit. Obviously, you're a person that takes massive action. And, you know, the people that are taking doing the most activities, you know, they do the best, but they also have the most, you know, skinned up knees too. So have you ever had, or, you know, obviously you've had some failures, but what's one of the things that maybe was a failure or something that didn't work out like you thought it would, that you're glad you went through it, and then here's kind of what you learned from it?
You know, this is one story I always tell, Doug, is back when we were at IHS and we had just, you know, cleaned up the business. We got it Sarbanes-Oxley compliant. We had taken it public. We were all poised and ready to have this acquisition machine start going out. We had tons of cash and tons of currency with our stock. And so we went off and did our first acquisition, and we bought a competitor. And we thought, like, hey, you know, that would be great. We'll buy that competitor. We'll take them out of the market. We'll get all their customers, et cetera. And the very first acquisition we did was just a total failure. And it was a failure because we did the acquisition for the wrong reason. We did the acquisition because we were like, hey, let's take that competitor out of the market, as opposed to how do we add value to our customers, right? So what we realized is that there was a reason why customers were with the competitor and not us, is because they liked the competitor better than they liked us. Mm. So we thought, oh, no problem. Those customers are just going to come right over. Well, guess what? They didn't want to come over. The cultures between the two companies were horrible, right? We were like oil and water. We were literally, you know, hand-to-hand combat in the market. And then next day you're supposed to say, hey, you're my brother now, come on in. And so it was just a crazy, crazy failure. And it's one that we sat back and we were like, oh my God, you know, we better get this right, you know, or we're never going to execute on the strategy. And that is really one of the things that I had done a bunch of acquisitions before then, but I will tell you that was a 2x4 to the head to say, wow, make sure, number one, you know, Jerry Stead, our CEO, used to always tell us back at IHS, strategy drives structure. Make sure you have a solid strategy. Make sure you have the structure that you want to go after. Make sure that the acquisitions fit somewhere in the strategy. Don't do it for ego purposes. Don't do it for competitive purposes, you know, et cetera. And really, really make sure that you're doing it for the right reason, or it will fail. And when it fails, oh my gosh, it's a very expensive failure, for sure.
No, that's great, great information. And kind of piggybacking on that, if you could go back just at any point in your career, just in your life, and give yourself maybe one piece of advice or tell yourself one thing, what would it be, and kind of at what time in your life would it have been?
You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I was always being told two things. One is, you know, John, you're too small, you can't do that, or, you know, whatever, or you're so stubborn, you know, why do you keep doing that things or whatever. And, you know, I go back and look at that, and at about 14 years old, I would love to tell myself is, hey, you know what? You're not stubborn. You've got tenacity. And that tenacity is going to take you really, really far in your life and in your career. And don't listen to people that say you're stubborn, because you're not. You're basically say you got your sights set on something, and you're going to work your butt off until you get it done. And so, you know, that's what I tell the kids too, when they say, oh, you know, somebody, so-and-so called me stubborn. I was like, well, are you stubborn, or are you tenacious? Cause there's a fine line, and one is really, really positive. One is negative, but one is really positive.
That is great stuff for our ambitious listeners. I really do appreciate you sharing that with us. And again, if you like what you're hearing and you want to be updated via text messages, you can text the word ambitious to 69922. That's text the word ambitious to 69922. Standard messaging rates do apply. Next, we'll be talking more to John about the ambitious things that he's doing right now, but also what's next, what's on the horizon, and how he goes through making those decisions right here on the Ambitious Radio Network. Are you tired of paying too much for electricity from the former monopolies and getting terrible customer service? Do you really even know how much you're paying per kilowatt? Sometimes they quote you a lower rate, but then add back in the delivery charge. Ugh, how frustrating. Go to electricity.guru, that's right, .guru, for your free analysis. Who knows, with just a few referrals, you could actually earn free electricity. If you're tired of paying outrageous electricity bills, do something about it. Would you like to get a significant discount or even get free electricity? Go to electricity.guru and compare our rates to what you're currently paying. Many of our clients are saving anywhere from 15 to 20%. We also have a referral program that allows you to earn free electricity. Yes, free electricity. And you cannot beat free cents per kilowatt. Award-winning service, competitive rates, and low deposits, if even required. Go to electricity.guru for more details. That's electricity.guru. We offer free energy credits to customers who refer and activate 15 or more qualified customers to our electricity service and are not passed on their bill. To get your free energy credit, your customers must be referred through the free customer gathering website. See electricity.guru for more details. All right, we're back on the Ambitious Radio Network. And I'll tell you what, I am writing down, as I always do, tons of golden nuggets and things that you know, just really, I think, are going to add value to my career, but hopefully for all of our listeners as well. And really just want to kind of chat with you just a little bit right now, sir, about, you know, some of the things that you've worked on. We talked about, you know, ACT and some of the acquisitions and some of those things. And, you know, I don't know, especially at the level that you're at, if you can talk about what's next on the horizon project-wise or anything that you would want to share with us. If you do have something like that, love to hear about it. But also want to know about the decision-making process. How do you go through that decision-making process? Number one of, okay, you know, I've got some vision, I want to go execute. But then number two, staying focused on, you know, what's important and what you're doing now and how you juggle that piece.
Yeah, so great. So let's start with the decision-making, because one of the things that I learned very early on in my life, being you know, in athletics and team sports, particularly being a quarterback in football, is that you need to surround yourself with really, really good people. You could be the best quarterback, and if you have, you know, horrible people around you, you drop back, guess what's going to happen? You're going to get sacked. You're not going to get anything off. So that means that I have to have the best people around me, and I love to make sure that I do that. And then you have to give them the freedom to execute, and not tell them what to do or how to do it, but just say, hey, guys, here's where we need to go. This is what we need to do. How are we going to get there? You guys, you know, figure it out. And that's, you know, part of what we do. So there's a couple of different ways that we do it here at SwiftBage, or I've done it in my career. Every quarter, we sit down and we have a quarterly offsite with my direct reports. And it sounds like, you know, oh yeah, that happened. But if you can get out of the office and think for half a day in some place that, you know, you're not bothered by all kinds of stuff, and really take a look at, okay, what's our strategy? Is it still the right strategy? Do we have to make any tweaks? And then what do we need to do to execute that quarter in order to continue to drive that strategy down? And so we do that all the time. We also have what we call monthly business reviews, where every month we get together with a little bit broader team. I call that the senior leadership team. That's all of my direct reports and all of their direct reports. And we really look at the business and make sure that, you know, are we on track? Are those things that we need to make sure that we do? And then the last thing we do, again, on a quarterly basis, is we have what we call an all Swifties meeting. So we're SwiftBage. We call ourselves Swifties. We're all part of SwiftBage Nation. And I get everybody connected via, you know, WebEx and Skype or whatever around the world. And we talk. And we talk for 90 minutes. And, you know, it's a little bit of, hey, here's how the business is doing. But more importantly, what I like to do is listen and say, you know, what should we be doing? So we have, you know, those types of things. We do not do decision by committee. You know, we empower people to make decisions in their areas. And if they can't, then, you know, and I need to be the tiebreaker, then that's when I'll come in. And sometimes I'll use the term, I'll say, guys, this, there are times for discussions and there are time for lectures. Today's a lecture. This is what we're going to do. Boom. You know, we kind of go through that. So that's kind of our decision making process. You know, it may sound a little bit motherhood and apple pie, but we do, empower people to make decisions. And we also allow them to learn fast. And you're going to hear people say, oh, you let people fail fast. Fail is such a negative thing. You know, I don't want people to fail fast. I want people to learn. If something doesn't go right, it's not a failure. It's a learning experience. Now, if you do that 2 or 3 times, that's a big learning experience that maybe you should go somewhere plus someplace else and learn that. It's definitely a learning experience. We have a set of values. We call it living the exclamation. One of the values is it's okay to ask for help. And I tell the Swifties, I do that every single day. You guys help me every single day. So it's okay to ask for help. And if you don't know something, you know, make that happen. So, you know, that's kind of our decision-making process. I'll stop there. Let you go in. But there's lots of neat stuff that we've got going on here that I think is going to blow away the CRM industry in the next 3 to 5 years. If you'd like me to talk about that,
I would. And so this segment, it's probably going to be a little bit more of a carryover, and it may actually be one that we have the recorded part on the radio, and then we have to do the rest of it on the podcast, because I don't want to skip through this, because I'm passionate personally about CRMs. I know that people can get left behind. You know, you talked about those four different cycles of business, and you can promote the heck out of it and get somebody to talk to. And the days of sticky notes and yellow legal tablets and all that, there's people that still use them, and they're getting left behind. There's customers that are just not getting followed up with, and they've spent all this money to acquire a prospect, if you will, and then nothing gets done with it or someone else gets it. And so I really do want to know about what you guys are doing, and then I want to talk a little bit about the other technologies that you mentioned, with Watson and some of the other things that, how those things work. So this segment may be a little bit longer, guys, and if you're tuning in on the radio and you miss a piece of it, we'll carry it over to the podcast for the full version of it. But Leah, let's talk about what you got coming up in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, sure. So when we acquired the ACT brand, obviously it was, it's been around for a long time. We're celebrating our 30th year anniversary this year, which is absolutely crazy for a software package to be around for 30 years. But, Sage had owned it. They had owned it for a while, and they had kind of let it start on a path of becoming irrelevant. They hadn't really invested in it, et cetera. When we acquired it, it was a closed desktop system, right? So you would buy it in a box and with a CD or DVD, and you would install it, and boom, it was done. And the very first thing we had to do is take that closed desktop system and move it to a cloud-enabled open platform. And it took us almost 2 years to do that. And once we did that, when we say open, it was really about creating an environment where, anything could connect to it, and we could connect anything to it as well, and it sat up in the cloud. So what you're finding in the small business segment today, Doug, is that people have so many different tools that they're using. Why? Because there's a lot of tools out there. Some of them are free. There's a lot of cheap tools, et cetera. And so what they're really screaming for is what they call a connected workplace. If I got a tool and I really like it, I shouldn't have to jump into that tool, jump out of it, jump into another tool or whatever. How can I connect these tools across so that information flows seamlessly across that? And that's really what we set out to do with our open platform. And in fact, today we have connections to over 750 small business applications. So pretty much any other tool that you use, you can go into ACT, there's a couple different clicks, and the next thing you know, you've got information flowing between the two tools. So that's really the where we are today. Now, where are we going in the future? The future for CRM is going to be very, very different than it is today. Today, people will buy a CRM, and it has lots of functionality, and they use some of the functionality, but they have to have the whole bits of functionality in order to, get the benefit of the CRM and all the connectivity, et cetera. In the future, people will want to interact with CRM software very, very differently, and they want to interact with it in a way that is purpose-built for what they do. So you're not going to see these big monolithic CRM packages that are out there that everybody has to install and get up and running or whatever. That'll all be running in the background in the cloud, And what you will interact with is your little purpose builder. If you're a sales guy, you want Sales Accelerator. That's what you want to do. You just want to be accelerating sales. If you're a marketing person, you want, you know, some marketing. If you want, you know, some of that. So there'll be these little purpose-built apps that, you know, you'll use one or two or three of those, but you know, that will connect to this platform running in the cloud. And that's how you'll use the software. And people will demand that. So if you're a technology company and you're not thinking like this, guess what? You know, in 2 or 3 years, you're going to be way behind behind the scenes. Now, it's a little bit different than people thinking, oh, no, I have that. I have all these this Chinese menu of different you know, modules that people can buy or whatever. Nah, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about subscribing to a platform and saying, I want to interact with that platform these three ways. And oh, by the way, on any device that I have, a phone, tablet, you know, laptop, you know, God forbid if you still have a desktop, you know, type of thing. Hey, guess what? I want to interact with it on my TV because I now got smart TV. So it's that's really going to go. Now, staying with that theme of interaction, you also have an interesting dynamic that is happening in the marketplace today and over the next about 3 or 5 years. And it's all the different generations, Doug, that we have out there. And, you know, you sit back and look at it, we still have baby boomers that are in. I'm one, you know, there's lots of them around, you know, around. And so baby boomers are still prevalent in the market. But then you also have Gen X, you have Gen Y, you have millennials, and guess what? We have Gen Z that is coming out. Gen Z is the next generation. The youngest are in middle school today, and the oldest are just now entering into the marketplace. So you have this entire new generation. So, and each of those generations learn and interact differently with software. And if you don't take a look at how do I enable my software or my solution to go across all those generations, you will alienate one or multiple of those generations, and guess what? You will limit your marketplace. And so, you know, that's really what. So now you start taking a look at, you know, people like Gen Zs and millennials, and even all the generations. We're getting so used to interacting things with voice, right? So if you think about your phone, you can talk to Siri, you can talk to Google. You've got Amazon that's coming out with the Echo and you know, talking to Alexa and things along those lines. So you're going to have this voice interaction that is going to become mainstream and very, very prevalent. And you're going to have to build your technology, your platforms, and your purpose-built applications so that people can interact with that way, and then build in the artificial intelligence so it can come back to you with recommendations. So it's not just like, oh, hey, ACT, you know, how did my marketing campaign go? You know, oh, it went like this. No, it's like, hey, it went like this, and oh, by the way, you should do this, this, and this. And that's really what people are going to be demanding over the next 3 to 5 years. So there's, you know, lots of stuff that we've got going on here, lots of code name projects that we were just out in New York this week, you know, showing some folks some of that cool stuff that I was talking about. It's about a year or so away before it becomes mainstream. But that's where this industry is going.
That is unbelievable and great information for our listeners. Really, I just can't say enough about all the notes. I think I might have taken more notes on this show in just three segments than I have in any other show, the full show. Great information. We'll be right back after a brief word from our sponsors, and we'll hear more about how John refreshes and his ambitious body, mind, and spirit right here on the Ambitious Radio Network. In this segment, we're also going to add a little bit to it, guys. So if you're listening on the radio, make sure that you tune in and get this extra little bit. We're going to carry it over for just a moment here. So let's talk real quick, John, about a little bit more about the voice recognition, the technology. I know you talked about Watson and some of the technology that's there. Now, will you integrate your systems with that, or is it something you'll independently develop? Or can you talk about that?
You know, I think we're actually looking at integrating with the big players that are already out there, right? So if you think about, you know, things like what IBM is doing, and what IBM is really doing is taking this massive amounts of big data and putting all kinds of algorithms around that and artificial intelligence and machine learning, and saying, you know, okay, you know, as we look for different trends and as we ask it questions, it'll continue to learn, et cetera. And again, that is going to completely change the way the entire, you know, not only software industry, but the medical industry and the automotive industry and everything else that's going on right now is just going to change dramatically. And then you have, you know, things like what Amazon is doing, where you have, you know, the Echo and Alexa, where it's really just a, you know, kind of an AI type of interaction that you're bringing back and forth. And so, you know, when we look at ACT and we talk about ACT being that authoritative source and housing all the interactions that people have with their customers or contacts, prospects, et cetera, that all of a sudden becomes big data for a small business, right? And so, you know, if you have, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of interactions, and then you're like, okay, what do I do with that? How do I pull the insight out of that in order to grow my business? And that's where, you know, there are some tools that we're working on, some algorithms, some recommendation architectures, and then connecting into things like what IBM is doing and what Amazon is doing, et cetera, to provide this environment where a small business can get access to all this information. But more importantly, you know, don't just dump it on them. Provide a very actionable insight back to them. Because, you know, quite frankly, they don't have time as a small business. You know this, right? You don't have time to sit there and say, oh, I'm going to hire a data analyst who's going to write me a bunch of reports and, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, one of the things, Doug, that people always talk to me about and say, wow, you're focused on the SMBs. They're a very unique market, correct? And I said, absolutely, they're very unique. And the uniqueness is they need everything that an enterprise business needs, except they need less complexity and it has to cost less. But they don't, you know, it's not like, oh, they need something different. They need exactly what the enterprise customers need, but they just don't have the ability to deal with it. They can't deal with the complexity and they can't pay for it, right, as much as the enterprise. So how do you make it simple and how do you make it cost effective? And that's, you know, that's really what we're after and leveraging all the other, you know, all the other folks, the big folks that are doing this. And how can I leverage that and get that down to the small business?
Yeah. And just a couple of quick little nuggets. You know, you talked about in an earlier segment about the Sarbanes-Oxley and how you guys got compliant and all those ways so that you could go public. You know, you mentioned that small businesses need all the same thing that enterprise versions do as well. You know, that is the truth. I mean, you know, one of the main reasons I think why a lot of small businesses don't want to get bigger is because of the complexity, and they can't. It's like they'd have to spend so much money on those compliance issues and other things that it's just scary to them, and they want to focus on what they're good at, you know, growing their business and just doing the business of business, not a bunch of paperwork and all that kind of stuff. But one other quick thing, I've caught myself doing two specific things with voice recognition, and I haven't ever done anything with Watson that I'm aware of, and I haven't done anything, you know, with the Amazon Echo or whatever. However, I do use Siri, and I do use Google, you know, voice for stuff on my phone. And I've caught myself actually speaking differently so that it can understand my words, so that it doesn't, like, I'll slow down my speech and I'll be more clear and crisp so that it can understand it, so I don't have to go back in and retype over whatever it's, you know, whatever it messed up and tried to translate, number one. And then number two, I also catch myself being annoyed if I actually have to type something out on my phone now, as opposed to just being able to talk into it. And so I think that the things that you're talking about are so relevant at some point, you know, as a competitive advantage, if you're using a software like ACT and it has that voice recognition, you know, hey, ACT, you know, pull this report for me real quick. As opposed to me having to go in and type something out. If you worked at another company and then that used ACT, and then you went to work for someone that didn't have it, when those things come out, it's going to be super annoying. Like, I've got to actually type in what report I want. What kind of old school company are you? And I can't wait to see what you guys are doing. That's really cool.
Yeah, no, it's good. It still has a long way to go. You're right with the understanding different accents and different things. I come from New Jersey, so every once in a while I'll get the East Coast twang going, and you know, as we're messing around with this, some information will come back, and I'll be like, "Well, how did you get that from what I just said?"
Right.
So yeah, it'll get better and better for sure. But your last point is absolutely right. specifically if you think about these Gen Zs that are coming into the marketplace, they're not going to want to sit in front of anything and type anything, right? They're going to want to talk to the software and get the software to do what they need to do. So, it's going to be, you know, we always say that technology changes so rapidly. It's a ton of fun to be in. Man, I think the next 3 to 5 years are just going to be absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I bet it is. And there's one other company, if you could chat a little bit about that, and speaking of chatting, WeChat. You know, in the pre-show prep, we kind of talked a little bit about that, and I have not heard of it before you mentioned it, but it's a Chinese social media platform, but it does all kinds of e-commerce and other stuff. You say you're following that. Can you elaborate a little bit on what you like about that company?
Yeah, absolutely. So I go over to China quite often, probably about every 2 or 3 years. We have a large distributor over there. And in my past life, I had to do a lot of business over there. And what I've seen, the last time I was there was literally 3 years ago. And so I just came back just a few weeks ago. And I will tell you that in that 3 years, China has dramatically changed. What I see over there is that the government has realized that in order for them to continue to innovate, they have got to let their people innovate. They have an enormous amount of people, as we know. But, you know, if you don't let them innovate, then, you know, you've got this massive resource that is just sitting there as a waste. So they've started to ease up on certain regulations inside of China, particularly around the internet and things along that. And what has happened is this explosion of internet companies that have made their way into the Chinese market. Now, one of these is this company called WeChat, and what it really is, gosh, it's a cross between Twitter and Snapchat and Facebook and all kinds of stuff, all kind of wrapped into one. But what has happened is it has dominated how people communicate, and it's not just social communication, but it's business communication. Every business uses WeChat. There's 930 million people that are on this WeChat platform over in China right now, and it does everything from you can do business on there, you can do transactions, you can do payments, you can put quotes across there, you can put you can put marketing through that, et cetera. And it is just exploded. And so, you know, why I'm watching it is I watched over the last 3 years of how it has just taken an enormous foothold in China. And this thing is going to breach the walls of China. It's going to come into the U.S. It's going to come into Europe. It's beginning to, you know, make its way into different areas in Asia. And so this is one of taking a look at why I'm watching it is how this thing is going to proliferate around the world. But number two is how did it get so popular so fast? That, you know, it's not, like, again, it's not just this little, you know, personal social thing, but this is a business tool that everybody uses, and they seem to, you know, not be able to do business without it. So really, really interesting. Keep an eye on this, Doug, because I think this thing's going to blow up like crazy.
I appreciate you sharing that with us, and we'll kind of wrap up this segment real quick and jump back in just a moment, talk more about recharging and those types of things. Again, right after a brief word from our sponsors.
Another RepairMyCreditNow.com story.
It's a day this family had dreamed of for quite some time. They were finally getting that brand new SUV. The salesperson at the auto dealership gave them the keys and told them to take it for the weekend. He'd prepared the documents and called them Monday morning. The kids had already installed the headrest DVD when the phone rang. Seems there was a problem with their credit they were unaware of. They'd have to return the SUV to the dealership immediately. Embarrassing, to say the least.
www.repairmycreditnow.com.
Hello, this is Doug Parker with RepairMyCreditNow.com. Do you have less than perfect credit, a repo, maybe some late payments, a collection account? Are they being reported accurately? Studies show that over 70% of Americans have inaccuracies on their credit reports. Where do you fit in? Go to RepairMyCreditNow.com for your free credit report evaluation. And remember, your credit is your future. If you want to get started now, log on now. RepairMyCreditNow.com.
RepairMyCreditNow.com. www.repairmycreditnow.com.
All right, we're back on the Ambitious Radio Network, and today we've got John Oshel of Swift Page. Did I get your name right that time?
You got it right.
Fantastic. Fourth time's a charm. So, you know, we want to talk about, you know, your how do you recharge? Because so many people, especially, you know, guys like yourself, you're traveling all over the world. You are doing business at a super significant level. And it takes brain power to do that, but it takes hustle and everything else. And that can be just draining. So what do you do to recharge? What does a daily rhythm look like for you?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's working out, and you know, as we talked about earlier on, I was an athlete all the way up through college, so I played at a very high level, and so I'm used to being training and being in good physical shape. So, for me, that's how I blow out all of my stress. If I'm either running, like this morning, I got up and I swam 1,250 meters. Or if I'm running or if I'm lifting or, you know, whatever, that's a time for me to literally just clear my head, focus on my body, for an hour or 90 minutes. And that just relaxes me, gets me set for the day. I'm a morning workout person. I'm usually up at about 5 a.m. workout, and then I'm ready to go. And, you know, right from there, I go right into my information gathering time of the day. So it's, you know, usually around that 6 or 6:30, and it's a good 30 minutes of, you know, being a sponge and trying to absorb as much information as I possibly can in that 30 minutes. And that's going to all my news websites, all different kind of stuff. I'm literally, combing everything, trying to figure out what's happened in the 7 hours of sleep that I had overnight, and how do I get ready for the day. So then it's, you know, then my family is getting up, so breakfast with the family, and then I'm on phone calls and in the car and on my way to the office. So, you know, that's and then I'm usually at the office till probably about 6:30 at night, and then phone calls all the way home, and then a little bit of family time at night. So that's normally a typical day for John Oshel.
Well, cool. So now the breakfast with the family, is that something that you've always, I mean, obviously when you're traveling, it's impossible, but is that a pretty standard rhythm where you're getting up, eating with the family?
You know, it is. And two things, right? Breakfast and dinner. And even, you know, I do, like I said, I do travel a lot, but when I'm home, when I'm in town, we force ourselves to sit down and have dinner together as a family. You know, I have four kids and three grandkids. So, three of our kids are out of the house. We only have one left in the house. But, when they were younger, it was that was our time, dinner time. And because of my schedule, we usually had late dinner. So we were, you know, eating at 7:30 or so. But the kids got used to that. And of course, with their sports and everything, that actually worked out well. So, you know, we all kind of gathered at the dinner table. And that was a time for us to, you know, what I always tell the kids is, you know, we check titles at the door and the dinner table, we're all one. And, we just communicate. So, and I like to have breakfast, with my son, our youngest son, Jackson, right now, because that's a way for me to connect with him before, you know, he starts his day. And then I connect with him again at the end of the day. So, I think it's really, really important to do that.
You know, we're going through a thing at church right now, talking about at the dinner table, and it just talks about how that's your, you know, kind of your one opportunity per day, as you mentioned, where you're all one, where you're just chatting. Hey, how did your day go? Is there anything on your mind? Is there anything that that you want to talk about? You know, are you mad at anybody? You know, just you know, you're having an authentic conversation, you know, right, with the family, and I can. You know, not in a good way. I can tell you that it hasn't always been a great rhythm for our family. We've got Sunday morning before church that we do a brunch, and it's good. Even my kids are adults now, but we're for the most part able to get together every Sunday and still do that. And so there's different things, but it's so great to see a leader, a very successful leader, that's still making that a priority and able to make it happen. So that's really, really good stuff. Now, just fun stuff. I mean, not necessarily the business of things, you know, working out, get your recharge, but just what do you do to have fun? Are there any, do you like going to movies, or are there documentaries or anything that you like to watch or anything along those lines?
Yeah. So my wife and I like to go to the movies. That's our date night when we do go out. It's usually a movie and dinner. But you know, for fun, you know, I love golf. I'm an avid golfer, and so I try and get out and golf as much as I can. I belong to two golf clubs, so my wife is always, you know, calculating the cost per round. And I said, "Oh, babe, that's probably not a good thing to do." and then you know, we have a house up in the mountains, in the mountains here in Colorado, and we try and go up there every weekend. As much as we can. And I'll tell you, it's like a mini vacation every weekend. You get up there, you can relax. And yes, I do have an office in my house up in the mountains, and I can connect whenever I need to. And unfortunately, I do. But you know, in the summertime, we golf up there. We have a boat, and so we go boating and, you know, water skiing and tubing and things like that. And then in the winter, it's skiing. And so, you know, it's a lot of those physical type of things, being outdoors and having fun, for sure. And I will also tell you that if I'm not watching sports on TV, my favorite channel is the History Channel. I love the History Channel. You know, there's just if I'm going to sit in front of a television other than watching sports, I want to learn something. And so I tend to be able to learn things from that channel.
You know, I'm the same way. I love the History Channel, and it's crazy. You know, you're flipping through and, you know, something's on there and it's like, man, it's kind of interesting. And then you just sit down and then all of a sudden, you know, a whole hour will go by of just, you know, just information of what's happened out there and those kinds of things. So that's great, great information. Now, let's say that someone wanted to maybe interact with you in some way, you know, or maybe they haven't, you know, looked at ACT in a while, such as myself. You know, for whatever reason, it just slipped off the radar. A decade has gone by, and I just hadn't looked at it again. What's the best way to interact with your company?
ACT.com. It's pretty simple.
Absolutely.
Just go to ACT.com. Act.com, and that will tell you all about how we can help you grow your business, and that's really, Doug, what we're in. You know, one of the things that we've done here at SwiftPage is created a culture that, you know, everybody believes in our purpose, why we get up every single day and come to work, and that purpose is we help fuel small business growth. So, you know, that's what ACT will do for you. So go to ACT.com and we'll help you get started.
Fantastic. Great, great information for our listeners. And, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I know that our listeners, you know, sometimes we have entrepreneurs that are kind of just getting started. Sometimes we'll have an author that'll, you know, give us some nuggets about business, but maybe they've been in business, you know, maybe not. You know, there's just different strokes for different folks, but we try to get that message out there. But you're a guy that has made it happen in multiple different businesses, multiple different markets, and really are knee deep in it right now, making it happen. And, you know, I really just appreciate you coming on and spending that time and sharing with our listeners, because I promise you there's some lives that have been changed by listening to this today. And kind of the last thing I would maybe just ask is that, is there anything particular that you might be promoting or would like to promote, or maybe this is a better way to put it. If you had a TED talk at some point, is there anything that you would want to talk about that's maybe not so much the business related stuff that you really are passionate about?
You know, I think the biggest passion for me is to make sure that people continuously want to learn, and I see that a lot. I have two lists that I keep of people that I've worked with and have worked for me over the years. I call them, one is my A list, and the other is my list of success. My A-list are all just people that I just know are, you know, go-to people that whenever I go into an assignment, like when I walked into SwiftPage, looked at my list, picked up the phone, you know, four people that have worked for me in the past were here within the next 30 days, and we got this thing going. So, you know, that's really good. And then the second list is the one I'm the most proud of. And that list is a list of people that have worked for me that have gone on to become CEOs or CIOs or COOs or CFOs, et cetera, and have really just become very, very successful. And that, and I'm hoping that I've had, you know, something to do with that and help them achieve with that. So, you know, but if I look at both of those lists of people, and there are people that are on both lists, by the way, it's a group of people that are never satisfied with what they know right now, but what else can they learn and how they continue to both personally and professionally continue to grow. And that's my passion. I do it for, you know, with all the people that are in business, but I also get down into the, you know, the middle schools and the high schools and the colleges and try and work with kids there. I'm very involved in what's a company called, or a charity called Kids Tech and Open World Learning, and I'm on the Governor's Business Experiential Learning Commission here, and all of that is geared towards getting people to understand that you have to continuously learn in order to continuously grow, both personally and professionally. So, big passion of mine.
Unbelievable. Great, great information. I mean, not only are you making it happen and in a significant way, but you're also, you know, making it happen in a significant way with giving back. And that really makes a huge difference. I had a gentleman one time that told me there's kind of three phases of life. There's a time to learn, there's a time to earn, and there's a time to give back. And at every stage in life, you're doing, you know, some of each one of those. But as you mature, you kind of stop, you know, stop learning as much, and you start earning. And then you're earning and you're learning, but then you're also giving back. And it sounds like that you're doing all three of those. And we're so happy to have had you on the show to give this information back to us, sir.
Doug, thanks so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Well, I really appreciate you. And tune in on Saturdays to Ambitious Radio, where we interview thought leaders and exciting entrepreneurs changing the faces of their organizations. Remember, you can make money or you can make excuses, but you cannot make both. So get out there and be ambitious.
Thank you for listening to the Ambitious Radio Network, hosted by serial entrepreneur Doug Parker. Join us weekly as we have engaging conversations with ambitious entrepreneurs and thought leaders on topics that can be applied immediately after listening. Like what you've heard? Listen to other interviews at ambitiousradio.com or subscribe on iTunes.